Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live. And we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Only 7 hours away from the NFL draft going down in Detroit. And joining us now to break it all down is Tim Hasselbeck, our friend over at ESPN. And, of course, head coach of the Ensworth Tigers. Tim, appreciate you for joining us today. We were just talking about how I find it very interesting that now all of a sudden we've seen two different mock drafts mock J.C. Latham to the Chargers. We also heard Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, earlier on our station say, yeah, I've been hearing a lot of smoke about J.C. Latham to the Chargers. Is J.C. Can the Chargers justify taking J.C. Latham, the right tackle out of Alabama, with the fifth overall pick?
I mean, I think you can. Like, you know, I just said to you guys last week, like, if you think somebody is going to be a decade-long starter, if you think somebody is going to, be somebody that's kind of plug and play, then, like, I think wherever you take him in the first round is justifiable, you know? Because look at how many times we say, okay, well, this guy's got to go at that point, and, you know, or he's good enough to at that point, and then you get him and he's a top three pick, and you look up 5 years later and you're not sure you won't even pick up the fifth year option or if he's any good. So I really think that, like, as we look at the first round and we try to separate the first round for the first five picks, and then, you know, he's the back half of the first round. Like, to me, if you are a decade long starter and you fit what that team needs, like, yeah, take him at the top.
With that being said, there's been a whole lot of, you know, speculation and smoke, so much talk about J.J. McCarthy. If you had to guess right now, where is J.J. McCarthy playing next season?
I'd say the Denver Broncos.
Ooh. And how does Denver get him?
My guess is that they would have to move up, would be my guess. You know, this is a weird year, and I think you guys would probably agree. You've been, you know, talking about it, you know, for months now, but, like, I mean, are the quarterbacks really flying off the top like this, you know? And is J.J. McCarthy really going inside the is he really going inside the top 10 for sure? Is he really going inside the, you know, the top 6 or 8 for sure? And, you know, I think we just, like, to me, just look at the two quarterbacks the Titans have drafted the last couple of years. The night before draft night, the last 2 years, people thought that Malik Willis and Will Levis would potentially go in the first round, and they didn't go anywhere near the first round. So, you know, I just think the quarterback rumors, the quarterback, you know, news and drama, I just feel like in recent drafts has just gone crazy.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Ensworth Tigers. Here in town. Now, Tim, what is, because I'm looking at these quarterbacks, let's stay on the quarterback theme. How do you think scouts and teams evaluate these quarterbacks from this standpoint? You have a guy like J.J. McCarthy who hasn't been a 3 or 4 year starter, but then you look at a guy like Bo Nix, and everywhere he's been basically a starter. Now, I know it didn't work out the way he wanted it to in Auburn, that's why he transferred, but he still was a good quarterback with what they asked him to do at Auburn. Then you saw him being able to adjust to a new system in Oregon, and he elevates his game even more. So where is that separation between a Bo Nix and, say, a J.J. McCarthy, who wasn't a 4 or 3 year starter?
Yeah, well, I think one of the really tricky things in evaluating quarterbacks, and I actually did something recently on Outside the Lines about this, is, like, okay, like, how do you evaluate these guys? And what do you, when something didn't go well, like, what do you attribute that to? And, or when it did, what do you attribute it to? And so, like, I look at Bo Nix, and just being candid about what I thought of Bo Nix at Auburn, I thought, man, like, he really walked into a high pressure situation. Dad was a quarterback there, was a very highly recruited player coming out of high school, was thrown into the mix to play at Auburn early, and they were a good team, but not necessarily a great team. and we're going to play certain teams in the SEC that were better than them. Well, that's hard for a young quarterback to thrive in that environment. I think, generally speaking, he like played some good football, but like all quarterbacks, you're going to make some mistakes. And so now you get run out of town, essentially, by probably the place that you grew up, envisioning yourself playing at because of his dad's history of playing there. And now you get essentially thrown to the West Coast. Well, then he gets there and he makes the most of that situation. So in terms of that, like D-Mace, like I'm going to look at that and I'm going to say, I like the fact that he's weathered the storm. Now, I don't know how somebody else looks at it, but I look at that and I go, you know something? There's a little bit of grit and resiliency inside that guy. Like, I like that. You know, I think in some ways you can apply the same thing to J.J. McCarthy. Like, Job wasn't ever, handed to him. Job wasn't, he had to earn it, played in some big pressure moments, and then also didn't get a ton of opportunities because of their offense. So, you look at those things and then you say, okay, well, what did they do just even schematically? How does that fit with us? And so I think you have to look at all of that, and that's why it's definitely not an exact science. Mm-hmm. And so, on somebody like Bo Nix, you'd say, the way I would look at it is, I like the grit and resiliency. Somebody else might look at it and go, nah, I mean, he walked into a perfect, situation and, walked to a perfect situation in Oregon with an amazing offensive line and a ton of speed. And and honestly, just a lot of guys would have had success. Maybe somebody else looks at it that way, but that's not how I would.
Yeah, and I can understand that because you can say take that same theory for J.J. McCarthy. Like, listen, that's a ready-made team. Only thing you have to do is not mess it up. And he didn't mess it up, but he was the, one of the reasons that they won games. So you can kind of, look at it from both angles where it could be a plus or a negative, just depending on how you see that player and if you feel that he's going to be available for you. Now, in this top 10, 15 picks, how many defensive players you think go? Because we've been talking a lot about offensive linemen, quarterbacks, obviously, and now you throw J.J. McCarthy in the mix, you might have four quarterbacks drafted in the top five. So you're talking quarterbacks, offensive linemen, and receivers. Where do you think, or how many guys do you think go in that top 15 in regards to defensive players?
Listen, I think the quarterback's going to be a big part of it, and then I think where their first receiver goes, we know offensive tackle is going to be in the mix. We would see a bunch of offensive, somebody was asking me the other day about, are we going to break the record for offensive players drafted in the first round, right? I think that number might be at 19, I think. That's a good question. I think the quarterbacks determine it. Here's what I don't think. I don't believe that, I don't think J.J. McCarthy is going to go in the top six. Which pushes him back, which, if he's the next guy and there are four quarterbacks taken by pick 12, I think that's the most quarterbacks that we would see, go that quickly. And then I think there's a really good chance that there's not another one that goes in the first round. And so in that environment, this idea that there's going to be this massive offensive run in the entire, first round or what's got, I think that's going to be the real indicator. That's my hunch on it. Now, look, I think Michael Penix, Jr. could be a first round draft pick with a totally clean injury history. And so maybe somebody looks at it and is like, yeah, I'm not worried about what he's been through. And maybe he jumps up, before Bo Nix. And so short answer, I'm totally guessing, but I do think there's going to be a lot of offensive players taken in the first 15 picks.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. So Tim, go a little further on Penix and your evaluation of him. He's an interesting story. He played so long at Indiana before he was really in the spotlight, and then he goes to Washington, becomes much more of a household name. He's older, which is another theme that we've talked about these last couple of years. That's sort of a new way that you have to factor in guys who have, because of the COVID, are older when they come into the draft, but they have more games under their belt. So what are his strengths and weaknesses?
Yeah, so here's an interesting thing. I originally, just to kind of give you a sense of my posture on how I viewed him, and how we can get tainted at times. I called the Gator Bowl when it was Indiana playing Tennessee. And Indiana was playing a quarterback that had come in relief because Penix had been injured. And he played really, really well. And they were a pretty good football team. Probably one of the, I mean, Indiana hadn't been to a bowl game in like 30 years and really had a chance to beat Tennessee in that, in the game. Anyway, because the quarterback was playing well, I was kind of like, I don't know how good this Penix guy is.
Right.
Like, really? And he keeps getting chances, and he was injured. And this other guy, he just makes good decisions.
Right, you hear that about Levis a lot. Like, well, why didn't he get the starting job at Penn State if he's that good?
Correct, yeah. And so I entered into the Michael Penix, kind of conversation as I was a doubter because I had Sam, forget the other kid's name, but this other kid who's just kind of less explosive, less dynamic, but a good football player and a good quarterback, he was having all the success. And so that was my initial posture on Penix. Well, he's a really good passer. I mean, not everybody, as much as I try, not everyone starts at the same level. So here's what I would say about him. I think that he sees it great. I think he's a great anticipator. I think he's a really talented thrower. You know, one of the things that, I think is big with quarterbacks is like their scope of vision. Is the guy, does he kind of have a narrow scope of vision or does he see things broadly? And I think that he does that. And so I think it's one of the things that makes him a really good passer, along with, having plenty of arm strength and having, being able to play with good anticipation. So, and I think teaching someone to be a passer is hard. I think he's naturally a passer. I think the injury history will scare people. It just will, collarbone, couple ACLs, like all of that, not a huge, huge guy. But I think that if he had a clean injury history, because of the type of passer he is, I think he would undoubtedly be a first-round pick.
On Joe Alt, I'm curious about this mental dynamic that I'm sure happens a lot over the years in drafts, where you're sitting there saying, I got my biggest need, and here's a guy that everybody says is ready to plug in there.
Yep.
And I'm wondering too, how that could maybe sway your decision when really you're looking about who's the best guy for the next 5 to 10 years rather than this guy plugs a hole this year. I can put him right in there. It's simple. You have to go beyond that, don't you?
Yeah, I think you do. But generally speaking, the guy that you look at and you go, yep, I can play him right now. Like, he's usually the guy too that yep, you can play him in 5 years and in 10 years. Right. And so I agree with you, but so when you're in that environment and you can sit there and go, I mean, it can run you into trouble too, Willie, right? You can say, okay, this tight end, there's this tight end, this, offensive tackle is ready now, but man, hey, Isaiah Wilson, he might be Orlando Pace. Like, he's not him now, but maybe he could be. To me, maybe this is why I'm not a gambler. I wouldn't do it. Why would you do it?
The safer pick sounds better to you.
Well, and here's the deal. The reason the safer pick sounds better is because you've watched him on tape and you're like, yep, he's good. I can trust it. I see it. And in our interviews, it checked out, and he's already strong. And yeah, the reason that he looks like he's going to be good right now is the same reason that he's going to be good in 5 years and in 10 years. It's just, you know what I mean? That's just, that's generally how it works. Now, are there some guys that develop and their ceiling is just, feels so much higher because athletically they're different? Sure. But, listen, your baseball background, I'm sure it's applicable where you're like, look, that guy's just a good pitcher. He's got great command. He's got an amazing approach. He's smart. He's competitive. And you're like, yeah, but the other guy throws, 7 miles per hour faster. Be like, yeah, that guy hits 4 guys a game. You know what I mean? So
I can't get anybody out, but he throws a lot harder. But the scouts are like, in 5 years, watch out for this guy.
Hey, guess what? You know what those guys do? They get you fired.
We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, kind of sticking along the offensive line theme. It's so easy for us to get up here and say, oh, there's a right tackle, just move him over to the left side, or he's a guard, just move him out to the outside, play tackle. It's easy for us to say, But of course, it's so much more difficult to actually execute. And I know every prospect is different. Every player is different and their histories are different. But just overall, as a kind of a philosophy, how do you feel about moving players that maybe have played traditionally on the right to the left and maybe players that have played traditionally on the left to the right side?
Yeah, I do think that it's not something you can take for granted. And, you know, I think sometimes people do it like, look, you know, and I've never been somebody that's had my hand on the ground trying to block somebody. And I think I've talked about this with you guys in the past. But, you know, the biggest athletic mismatch that exists in the National Football League is these insanely talented edge rushers and the 6'7", you know, 320-pound tackle. Because, look, you got the Jason Pierre-Pauls of the world, you know, doing, you know, handsprings and backflips and doing all that, right? Like these freakish athletes that look like they could be power forwards. And they're going against guys, and I've made this joke with you before, they're going against guys that wore T-shirts to the swimming pool because they were embarrassed when they're young. Like it's the biggest athletic mismatch that exists in the National Football League. The elite talented edge rusher and the big tackle. And so now you're saying to a guy, yeah, just go ahead and move over to the other side. You're like, wait a minute. Like, no. Like there have been a lot of, you know, time and skill and work to get to this point. So, you know, I think that for me, you know, would say, well, does it mean guys can't do it? No, it doesn't mean guys can't do it. But, like, it's not for everybody, and I don't think it's something you can take for granted.
Now, Tim, I mean, this day brings about a lot of crazy things. We've seen the Laremy Tunsil gas mask situation, and ultimately that, you know, sort of messed up his draft stock. He started to fall down.
He likes to party.
Exactly. We saw, you know, what happened with the kid, Lionel Collins with LSU, yep. All the stuff that came up, and he ended up falling. What is one crazy draft day situation that you've experienced, whether it be, on a team or, you know, sitting there and doing a draft on draft day?
You know, I don't know that I have a crazy, crazy one. I mean, I think I told the story to you before, like on the, I think, you know, Mathias Kiwanuka, who was like the Giants had him as the highest rated player at 19. They didn't want to take him. They trade all the way back to, you know, 32 or 1 or whatever it was. And he was still the highest rated player. And they basically were like, look, we're wasting our money in our scouting department if we don't take him. So, like, there's that. You know, I think the other one would be, I was a player at the Giants. This is, I guess, kind of interesting. I was a player at the Giants, and Ted Ginn Jr. was on a visit, and I just happened to be, you know, working out that day, and so I was in the locker room, and he was on his phone talking to somebody. And I don't know if you remember this, but he was coming off of like a bad foot injury. Mm-hmm. And the Giants had him in. He was going to be a first-round draft pick. And I hear him on the phone telling somebody, like, I'm not even close to running right now. Like, I can't even put real weight on my foot. And I was like, man, it's kind of reckless to be having that kind of conversation in the building. Like,
exactly.
I'm just a backup quarterback here. But, like, what happens if, you know, we had our general manager that was listening to you say that? So, yeah, I think those are, you know, I've heard the things about, you know, I don't know, like the pre-draft process. I think there, you know, usually some unique stories there. But, you know, on draft day, you know, as an undrafted guy, I kind of treat it in protest at times.
Last one for you, Tim, before we get you out of here. I'll put you on the hot seat. Who are the Titans selecting tonight? And with what pick?
Yeah, I think they stay where they are, and I think they take a tackle. And that's probably all.
You know, that is we haven't heard that yet, Tim. That's new.
Hey, sometimes, like, the obvious thing is the right thing, and it seems like, You know, it seems like that's the case, right? Like, I mean, like sometimes it's simple and we don't need to make it harder. Yeah. And the team doesn't need to make it harder than it should be.
Sometimes the Titans have a way of making things more difficult than it needs to be.
Yeah, well, let's hope they don't. So, you know, we can get a good
draft. Yeah, listen, I've heard D Mace has kind of been on one the last few weeks. So we can't have him do something crazy and have him go crazy for another month, all right? Like, that won't be good.
It's good for content, maybe not the best decision for the football team. Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, do you have any draft coverage tonight that the people can tune into?
I do. I have post game, so as long as the Titans don't do something crazy, you catch me on Van Pelt Sports Center tonight after the draft.
Okay. Don't hold your breath there, because you never know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that one.
But we'll be tuning in after the draft. Tim, appreciate your time. Thanks for stopping by, and we'll catch up next week.
You got it. See you guys.